Shout out Shaq Edwards.
The majesty.
Oh my goodness.
It's professional wrestling.
K-O-K-24-7
Confirmed.
Mage.
Stay mage and enjoy yourself.
Hey everybody, this is WWE Champion CM Punk, Straight Edge Superstar CM Punk.
This is WWE Champion Big E, and I'm with my guy, my man, the bald legend himself.
Hey everybody, Daniel Bryan here, hanging out with Rosenberg at Rosenberg Radio. Do you want to hear him talk about wrestling? Yes!
Hey y'all, what's up? This is Bianca Belair, the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best, and I'm hanging out with Pete Rosenberg.
Hear that?
That's the Cheap Heat!
Ladies and gentlemen, the world's number one sports recreation podcast, Cheap Heat, is back on this Tuesday, April 23rd, a Passover Tuesday, if ever there was one. Hosted a Seder last night. Whatever, we'll get to that shortly. I'm a mess. Couldn't get a haircut till after the show today. Apologies. Suited SGG in effect. SGG, did you win whatever you had to do today?
Settled. So I consider that a win.
Well, because you don't have to do more work. It's over.
Oh, of course. Of course. Client's happy. I made it here in time. It was looking shaky for me today with the, yeah, exactly. I got out, but I'm here. Didn't have time to change, get into a Mark shirt.
No. SGG? It's okay to look like a professional, even though you did unbutton the top button already, though.
I did, yeah. Because I'm off, you know?
Is that button ever being buttoned?
No, it was buttoned. It was buttoned. It was buttoned for the judge.
Because it looks like from this angle, to button that button would be a neck danger, I think is what Dip is suggesting.
It would be a button danger, right? A button.
All right, so that is the physically large stat guy, Greg, fresh out of court, and also coming to us from Los Angeles in his office wearing a sweater. It is 36 to 35, Dipperstein. Hey there, hi.
No tie.
I'm guilty as charged, Greg.
And also an unbuttoned top button.
And a rather casual undershirt for the sweater, kind of like a cash. Like this, Dip, you could be like a therapist wearing this outfit today. Very therapist energy right now.
Well, the outfit could be a therapist, but the face like could need a therapist.
No. Bear, shut up. Shut up. I'm doing a podcast. The world's number one. I apologize, everyone. Everyone, welcome aboard. It's been a very busy, hectic time. There's a lot happening in the world of professional wrestling. Before we dive all into it, I do want to thank everybody last week who found the podcast, who's back here finding it again. It has been a fascinating undertaking. Shout out to Mark Calloway to relaunch something, try to get as many people over to it as possible, and then do the back end work, guys, to like see the people listening and where they're listening from. Dip. You'll get very excited. Maybe during the podcast, you want me to read you the random countries that pop up on the list?
Yes. I literally, my ears just perked up when you said knowing where people are listening. That's so exciting. Do we have a Papua New Guinea listener?
I'm opening it right now. I'll try to tell you the most obscure listener that I can find. But before we even do any of that, I do want to say, guys, there's going to be a big Friday episode this week. Last week was a watch-along situation, which we had a lot of fun. If you haven't listened, if you only are a Tuesday listener, then you may have missed out that last week we watched Saturday Night's Main Event from January 3rd, 1987. If nothing else, I would say the number one reason to listen to the show, you've never heard Dip in so good a mood. I mean, it was a Thursday. We recorded it on a Thursday night at like 8 o'clock. Like Dipperstein could sniff the weekend. He was out and about. And not to mention, we were talking about the only wrestling that he truly loves through and through. And that is wrestling from the late 1980s. So everyone was happy. SGG was in full form. Emilio weighed in. Miss Hatton weighed in. It was a great time. So if you haven't heard it, go back and hear that. This week, we're going to do something different. I'm working on a massive interview for the Friday show. So make sure.
Is it the one?
I'm told I'll know today if it's the one. So
let me know. I will clear schedules. I'll wear the suit. I'll even.
You don't have to wear the. You don't have to wear the suit, SUJ. That would be going a bridge too far. That would be that. That makes me not. That makes me worry about you. Don't wear the suit.
We should all be suited up if this is the one.
I mean, but we'll see. I've been hustling hard to try to get whatever I can. But no matter what, I strongly recommend the Friday episodes. In this current iteration of the podcast, we're keeping moving forward with the Friday. It may end up becoming a Patreon vehicle at one day that the Friday episode is for Patreon only. But for right now, we're just bringing you heat on Tuesdays and Fridays. So shout out to all of you guys. Thank you for all the amazing ratings and reviews. Please keep them coming and spreading the word if you haven't, because this is going to be a process. And guys, first of all, happy Passover, Dip. Do you have any comments, any thoughts? Did you discover anything new yesterday about Seders that you didn't know you felt prior to yesterday?
I had the most non-denominational dinner Seder thing I've ever had. You know, I went to my aunt and uncle's. We had, you know, a nice chicken dish,
delicious,
and a chickpea thing. You know, like my uncle's a very good chef, so we had like just a very solid dinner. But there was no
Seder.
The only thing was that it was a cup, and we had Elijah's cup sitting to the left of us. But first of all, he's a great guy. I don't
Elijah?
Know if you ever met him. Yeah, he doesn't say a word. He sits there silently. He's the ideal dinner party guest, frankly, Elijah.
I've told you guys the Elijah story from the Rosenberg household, that he once actually showed up to my house. And now it's become like an upsetting story that my mother doesn't like when I tell. So it used to be like a funny story I would tell. And now I tell it and I see her give me a look of like, don't tell the story anymore, because she actually believes that my family shooed Elijah away.
Well, I don't think the Cheap Heat listeners have heard this story, and I don't think it would upset your mother if you told it more time.
Well, no, she won't hear it, so it doesn't matter. So the quick story is, for people who are not Jewish, there's the one of the things on Passover. It's actually very random that was the one thing you did dip. It's like, I don't want to, it's not an afterthought. It's important, but like, it's surprising. You'd think it would be the matzah, not the Elijah cup.
He wanted to come. I don't know. He called last minute and said, I'm coming, and, you know, put out a cup for me.
So that's the whole gimmick, is that you're supposed to have a cup for Elijah, who's, you know, the descendant of, it's some real old school religious-y type stuff. The descendant of King David and Elijah, and he comes back and he walks in the door and whatever. You open the door for Elijah, he's not there. You continue on with a thing, right? You're supposed to open the door for Elijah. It's a spiritual sort of thing. I'm doing a horrible job describing it, and I apologize in advance. I'm completely jumbled.
Because you make it sound like if Santa was Jesus and you left out milk and cookies.
It's if Santa was Jesus. That's literally what it is.
But by the way, Dip, you would agree, it's there's Santa energy around Elijah, no?
I mean, I would say Santa energy?
In terms of a character that we say shows up.
Yeah, some random dude just shows up at your house and you got to leave out.
Yeah, you're leaving something out for him. You're opening the door for him. I mean, that's Santa energy.
Santa comes in, he eats cookies. He has milk, probably oat milk at this point in his older age. I don't think he's drinking whole milk at this point. And then, you know, Elijah comes in, doesn't eat a thing. You don't even need to put a plate out for this guy because he doesn't even eat.
He just noshes a little bit. He's a little bit here, a little bit.
So that's the whole gimmick, is this idea that Elijah comes. And if I was a better Jew and my head wasn't so scrambled, I could probably think a little bit more about the story. But that's the main point of it. And one year when we lived in Silver Spring at our old house, my house from when I was a little kid, someone showed up to the door attempting to, and I quote my father, selling toys. My dad was like, we're not interested, blah, 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 sends him off. Later on in the conversation, we get to the Elijah thing. A moment comes up and my dad goes, ha, 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 Elijah may have come to the door earlier. A stranger came to the door selling toys and I sent him off. And everyone's like, what? What do you mean? And my dad describes this person and they're like, who comes to a house selling toys? What do you mean? Who was this person? Who did you send off? My dad then subsequently asks everyone in the neighborhood. No one else in the neighborhood saw the guy who was selling toys. So it's possible Elijah came to my home and was sent off by my father.
I think this was Santa trying to make a buck.
I think so too.
He's all these excess toys. He's like, what am I going to do? Sort of like the Cheap Heat shirts from the Eat and Greet.
Oh, you know what? Glad you brought that up, Dip. Perfect segue. I don't know if any are left. We were down because Ted released them this weekend at WrestlingForSale.com. Larges and extra larges. And as of a couple of days ago, there were a few left. I said, he was like, oh, do you want to post again? I said, no, let me do Cheap Heat so the people can hear the episode and at least get a chance. So go to wrestlingforsale.com right now and buy the last of the Cheap Heat special Philly spectacular shirts. Thank you, Dip. Anyways, we hosted a Seder. Natalie was incredible last night. Her matzo ball soup was amazing. By the way, Dip, did you know that? Do you know that Sephardim, the Sephardic people, their charoset is not sweet? It's barely sweet. It's like sour.
Yeah, we've talked about this every year.
It's insane.
I feel like you have, yeah.
It's insane. It's sour.
More sour every year. He's like more and more surprised.
We had the sour charoset. She made the fish. She makes this, I think it's called chaimi. She made matzo ball soup. She made delicious chicken. I mean, Natalie's chicken is, I'm telling you, she's special. Anyways, so I did my best to catch up with the wrestling. There was a huge Knicks game last night. New York is like on fire right now with the Knicks. I know Dip doesn't care, but there are people that care. And so we tried to catch up with the wrestling as well. And of course, I had not yet gotten to see the Women's Battle Royal, but because I love social media and pro wrestling so much, nothing goes better. Nothing goes better with pro wrestling.
I'm sure you were baited there by the Knicks game also. Like, you went to celebrate the Knicks and then wrestling news also hit you because...
Honestly, it really is just the worst. Like, that there was a time when social media was a thing, but like, you didn't have accounts from the company that announced everything immediately. Like, I wonder if that's an actual consideration. Like, hey, do we want to give away everything that happens the second it happens? I guess this decision has been made. We don't care. Because obviously, I open it up, and spoiler alert here, but you're listening to the show. I open it up, and I see Triple H standing there with Becky Lynch. And I go, oh,
me too.
I didn't get to the Battle Royal yet. So
I got to get off of social media with wrestling. I got to stop with, I got to get off social media in general.
You're barely on it. You're the best off of everybody.
It ruins everything. I same thing. I'm at my aunt and uncle's for dinner. I have every intention of going home and watching Raw. I open Instagram for 5 seconds, and the first thing that pops up is Triple H and Becky Lynch with the title. I'm like, what is to be enjoyed in life?
I would never recommend anyone unfollow the wonderful WWE social accounts.
I don't even follow it. It just comes up.
Really?
I don't follow anything like that.
And it just comes to you anyway. You got... I could never explain this to Dip, but there's a way to mute suggested accounts. You should be
muting.
I'm
trying to do that. I'm trying to mute a million things.
You should say not interested.
For some reason, I'm getting animals hurting each other. Horrible things come up in my explore page.
Oh, no.
Because it's you, Dip, I'm just going to say accept defeat, and this is just part of your life now. Because like Rosenberg said, unless you hand him your phone, there's no way to fix this.
Horrible things are coming up in my explore page that I don't want to see.
You shouldn't go to the explore page. I'm telling you, the explore page is not for you. Don't go to the explore page. If you want to, just don't go. What is the point? Ultimately, what is the point? When I go and open up and this is one of the subjects that I will be tackling on my...
You're obsessed with social media.
My soon-to-be-announced pod... By the way, you say that, Tip. I'm obsessed with hating it. You think I'm obsessed with liking it. I'm obsessed with hating it. So you don't understand what the addiction part of it is, but you obviously have something with it too, because you don't even need to be on there and you're opening it for no reason.
I was going to say too, you're not obsessed. You're trapped in it, P. You're trapped in it. I mean, you have a bunch of jobs and you have something to promote constantly, and there's only a few ways to do it.
It's nonsense. I'm interviewing an intern on Thursday, and maybe this kid, God willing, the last one I interviewed, it was not good. It was not. Let me just, for anyone out there as kids that are getting of age, please tell them, don't be late for your internship interview. Having the busy person who's making time to talk to you wait for 5 minutes because you at 19 years old can't be on time, bad impression to make early on. And then, the person, I'm like, oh, so are you really into social media? And she's like, yeah, no, I love social media. I'm like, oh, what kind of stuff do you pay attention to? Because my number one hope for this intern would be they can help with social media. I need to find someone who's smart and can get it and can understand how to put, oh, yeah, I'm really into stuff. What kind of stuff do you follow? Oh, everything that's going on. I said, oh, do you follow like the hip hop stuff that's going on? She goes, oh, yeah. And she starts naming several things that she's been following. And I'm like, what about the Drake Kendrick Lamar? Oh, I forgot about Drake Kendrick Lamar. I went, this is off to a bad start. And then I go, what other stuff are you into on shows and media? She goes, recently I've been really into ASMR videos. I was like, I don't know that you should be saying that in the interview.
It's big on TikTok. It's massive on TikTok.
I don't know what the hell.
So every little, yeah. so dip, like for example, if I were to put up an ASMR video about Rocky, we'd be cleaning Rocky and every time we brush him, you'd hear like, and then I'd scratch his little paws and you'd hear the, and it's just like, it's a weird fetishy kind of thing. Anyways, it wasn't what you want to hear in the interview. People are strange. So anyways, that's how I found out Becky was champ. And I have to say, guys, in terms of finding out that way, it was very boring. I was like, oh, like, because Becky just lost her championship match, right? Like, she just had a huge championship match and she didn't win. So when I hear that Rhea Ripley is unfortunately on the shelf, and as we talked about last week and Dip waxed poetic on, and they decide to vacate the championship, my first thought is this is an opportunity to put the title on someone different and kind of weird. That's where I go. I'm not a promoter. I'm not Jim Cornette. I don't know it all. But me, Peter Rosenberg, wrestling fan, when I hear battle royal for a new champion for like the fourth time ever, we're going to have a battle royal to name a champion. I go, ooh, could this end up on someone weird? So when I see Becky in the picture with Triple H, I immediately was kind of like, ah, just because I've seen it before. And it's like, you know, Becky's going to be champion again. She's a perennial champion, not champion. Like, she's an all-time great. So it just, that was my take. I have not yet watched the entire Battle Royal. I have it up right now. But SGG, talk to me. What were your thoughts?
I think that Becky is the perfect person to have this championship right now because of how she got the title, right? Basically, every heel in the match beat on her, and then she eliminates Liv last. And I know people wanted Liv to come away with the championship, but Liv's revenge tour just got started. She lost her main target, Rhea Ripley, but this revenge tour is all about her getting back to a championship. So if she gets it the next week, she already got her revenge. And there is no tour, and then there's really not anything really interesting for Liv to do in terms of reintroducing her to the audience because she just came back as well. But now she has a focused target, a capable champion who, when she ultimately defeats Becky Lynch, and I think that will be what happens, it will be after she tears through not just Becky, but the rest of the roster, and we actually get a revenge tour because, you know, we wax poetic about Rhea, but whenever you lose somebody, you lose the threads and the wrinkles of the stories that they're involved in also. And I'm sure it was a tough decision for them to have her relinquish, but Liv's revenge tour has to mean something also. So with Becky in place of Rhea, I think it is going to get to mean something.
I didn't know the women's division revolved around the Liv revenge tour. Dip?
I don't know either. I don't really understand it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm fine with Liv at the top of the card as far as, you know, the women's division, but that whole thing is not that exciting to me.
Would it be crazy, by the way? Aren't we about to do a Queen of the Ring tournament? Would it be crazy to do like a Queen of the Ring and there's also a championship involved where you win? Not only will you win Queen of the Ring, but this time you will also win the women's world championship?
Yeah, but I mean that the Queen of the Ring is a after Backlash. So they'll be like a month or so when
it would be almost a month. It would be like 3 weeks where then you'd have, you know, the stakes would be higher for people trying to get into Queen of the Ring, which let's be honest, everyone loves King and Queen of the Ring. It's a great time. It means nothing.
It never has. I hate to cut you off, P, but they sort of kneecapped that statement in Raw because actually the King and Queen of the Ring, Gunther revealed, they're going to get a shot at the title of their choice at some point in the future. So they're actually.
Oh, when he said that, is that what he meant? That's official?
I believe so. That's how I interpreted it.
No, I think he was just like declaring himself a person, which needed to happen when the belt came off of Gunther. I think he's just sort of declaring himself a person that is like available to win the world title.
I think that he made it official that there's
a, how can he make it official? Did anyone else make it official afterwards? Unless Michael Cole comes on and says, you heard it here first, the king and queen, you know what I mean? I think he was just saying, I'm going to win that and I'm going to win the world championship. But I will say, I just feel like this was sort of a rush job. And if I was going to do a battle royal for the title, you talked about it last week, SGG. Isn't a battle royal the perfect spot to have Nia Jax win the championship?
Yeah, and she was this close too.
And we always have that big, you know, the mountain of a man or woman who's in the battle royal, and they go, how will anyone eliminate this person? And the person's always eliminated. Wouldn't last night have been the time to go, this time when we say, how are you going to eliminate Nia Jax? No one does. And she wins the world championship. To me, that would be interesting. That would be something. Now, listen, maybe there's a longer play here, as you pointed out, SGG, with Liv and Becky. Obviously, you know, Liv is a superstar people are connected to, and maybe they'll be excited to see Liv and Becky do their thing. But I don't know. Kind of felt like right after losing Rhea was a great time for Nia, who, by the way, I love Nia's gear last night. I thought she looked awesome. But to me, it just seemed like an awesome opportunity for Nia Jax to finally get that spot. Made sense to me.
I think everybody likes Nia, especially since she's returned and her resurgence. It feels different. I think fans are into it. So I think everybody likes Nia.
Both Becky and Liv being at the top of the card, both well-deserved. They're both fantastic. It's just not surprising on either count. They both, over the last couple of years, sort of lived, no pun intended, at the top of the card. I thought it was an opportunity to try something different. I always feel that way about these sorts of spots.
But in terms of the top of the card, is Nia that different?
But yeah, but when was the last time she really was taken seriously at the tippy top of the card? It's been a long time.
It's been too long. I mean, you know how I feel. I'm with you 100%. She needs to be in the main event picture. I mean, she's headlined Raws and SmackDowns or whatever, weekly television, but no, that's not true. She's been, I can't remember, but I think it was her versus Rhea.
No, that was for a second. She did. She had one pay-per-view, one PLE. It popped up out of nowhere. And her and it was the home one for Nia, though. I mean, for Rhea. So it was in Australia and everybody, you know, it was kind of a no chance situation. That's the problem. The last time she was there, it was a spot that was just sort of like absolutely insurmountable. Before we do a little bit more, I want to talk about my guy Damian Priest as well. I think there was also another Uncle Howdy Fiend whatever QR code last night. Is that right, SGG?
That is right. Just before Chad Gable's promo, the buzzard and the QR code pops up. If you're fast enough to catch it, you would have caught it. I was not. I don't know what the video revealed, but it's similar to the White Rabbit stuff. This is definitely pointing to Uncle Howdy.
It was Elijah.
That was the QR code?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you go to the QR code, it's a guy selling toys and drinking wine.
I will tell you though, I do have fun with the QR code and the whole people going and finding stuff themselves. It's fun.
I'm all about it. It is something plus. It's an egg everything week to week. I'm all about
it. I just hope when we get Taylor Rotunda in whatever form we get Bo Dallas, I hope that... I love the idea of him being able to also harness the Fiend. I think that's like such a cool way to go in the future. It makes so much sense. There's something about his charisma that's like this different but very similar and familiar version of his brother. And remember, on this show, we always thought Bo Dallas was Mage, even when he was just Bo Dallas.
Yeah.
You remember
we were big believers.
Big believers. You remember when we fantasized about the idea that they never did of his finishing maneuver being getting people to tap out a submission where while they were fighting it, he was like, come on, you can do it while yeah. He had them in the submission. It was such, we loved Bo. We loved Bo. I have two Bo Leaf shirts somewhere.
God, think about like life coming full circle. You know, for someone like a Bo Dallas, who's now poised to become one of the biggest and most interesting and intriguing characters in all of wrestling. And think about where he was just a few years ago, sort of just totally down and out. Obviously, the horrible, tragic death of his brother, who we all love.
That's the thing that makes life so insane, though, is that so now he'll now he'll have this dream-like run, hopefully, which would be amazing, but it'll always be somewhat empty.
He won't be able to share it with his brother, but he will...
He'll get to honor his brother and
he'll get to honor. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. I mean, he'll get to manifest his brother and all of his talent.
Even beyond a fiend-like character, even beyond like a masked Uncle Howdy character, I really think that Taylor is like a super charismatic, talented dude. Like I just think there's
and he's a great guy.
And
right?
a great guy. There's a lot there.
There's something up. There's something going on. A lot of excitement.
I'm sensing things.
I do want to circle back to Damian Priest, though. So last night he confronts Dominic Mysterio after a Judgment Day loss, and he tells him straight up, I don't need you guys. You guys need me. Is he ready to go solo, do you think, and carry the title by himself, no group, and just be one man army slash warrior slash champion?
Is he ready to go full old dirty bastard? I'm the one man army, Asan?
That's right. That's right.
Is well, he's never been taken out.
I'm very worried about the Dominic Mysterio mustache. Okay,
yeah, I don't know where that came from.
This could sink him. I am not into this mustache.
Wait, does it make him look like Theo Vaughn?
It looks repug.
Let's focus on Priest for a second. If we already thought that there were concerns about the future of the Judgment Day prior to Rhea going down, I would say that in this moment, it's time. Damian should leave Judgment Day. It's over. The whole thing should blow up. Explosion.
Yeah, but now it's blowing up unnaturally.
This is the business that we're in. Things happen. What are we going to do? She's out. You've lost such a major piece. You have the title on Priest. Dominic is kind of between stories. I'm not a writer, but there's probably a creative way to do this, but I feel like the explosion time should happen nowish. Although don't you think a story between Dominic and Damian Priest would do a lot for both of them?
That's what I was going to say. It feels unnatural, but not really, right?
And well, but by unnatural, I mean natural.
Okay. Right, actually natural, right.
But because they have been sort of teasing it, right? Like, you know, Finn Balor suggests to Damian, hey, maybe we should go after our tag team titles. And Damian's like, no. And even Dom going off and making his own decisions and making friends outside the group. Damian was the one who always had a problem with that. So if Rhea were there, I could see a world where Damian sort of gets fed up with that. And she has to choose between Dom and Damian. And Damian's the one that finds himself excommunicated. So I think that tension between Dom and Damian is something that could lead to Damian going solo in a way that they've already kind of set up.
Now here's the thing. So last night, Damian and Jey Uso had their moment. And we're going to get Jey versus Damian at Backlash. We don't think there's a chance they're just going to bail on the Priest of it all and Jey Uso wins the title. Because Jey Uso alluded to it in a very clever way in his promo last night. He basically said without saying it, you're like a transition guy. And the point was to get the title off of Drew so I can win the title. And when he said it, I was kind of like, I hope that's not what they do here, because Damian Priest is becoming something, and throwing it on Jey Uso right now, just because he's been a popular babyface for a long time. I know this sounds crazy. I don't think it would do anything. I don't think Jey Uso getting the title thrown at him at Backlash in France is the thing to do for Jey Uso or Damian Priest right now.
I could see Jey Uso being champion in the next month.
A week from Saturday.
I could see them saying, I'm not sure about Damian Priest as champion. Let's put it on Jey Uso.
Honestly, or I could see Jey Uso getting taken out by his little brother, who's a tyrant right now, who is on a warpath and seemingly going back and doubling back to take out old bloodline enemies.
Or not taken out by his brother. Oh, wait, which brother? Oh, Solo.
Solo, yeah. Because Jimmy's gone. He lost. And then they circled back for KO. Suddenly, Solo has a problem with KO. They beat him bloody on Friday. I can see them circling back for Jey.
It makes sense.
And taking him out of the picture.
But I hear what Dip is saying too. The idea of like, we're not sure this, that would be a mistake. It would be a mistake that you could see people making. WWE is on fire right now, right? You want everything to be hitting all the time. This is the one thing you have to watch out for when business is booming, I feel like, is that everything's so hot. We got to keep everything hot all the time. Are we sure about Priest? These things sort of need time right now. The good thing is you always have Triple H there who's always going to want to see these things through and not give them short shrift. So I have faith. It took Damian Priest a while to get there. It would be so, to cut him off at the knees right now, I think would be silly, especially when, as we pointed out earlier, he's getting better and better on the mic. I don't think you get away from Damian Priest, but to Div's point, I could see them being like, I don't know, man, the kids love Jey Uso. Let's sell some yeet sunglasses and put the title on Jey Uso. And to me, Jey Uso has been hot without the title, and Damian Priest with the title means something. Like the Priest with the title is sort of the essence of what a title can do. Priest was big. The title was big. They have both helped each other quite a bit in this moment with the way that it happened with the cash in at WrestleMania. I would not bail on that.
And that's why you don't bail on it, right? And like you said, WWE has sometimes cut people off at the knees, but then they did, you know, they stuck with Jinder for a while. He won the title. I believe he carried it.
Oh, by the way, well, they stuck with him until last week.
But I mean, in terms of his title run, right? They gave him a real chance when they decided they were going to try something new with him. And part of the reason they could do that was because on the other side, there was Brock with the championship as sort of like a steadying force. And I think Damian Priest is in a similar position where they have Cody. He's the champion, the clear top guy. So that frees up the space for them to sort of elevate Damian in the meantime. And I don't think that that would mean taking the title off of him and cutting him off at the knees.
Yeah, Jinder is a missed opportunity. That dude is a big time dude with a lot more potential there. All right, guys, we'd be remiss now. We are at the 35-minute point. Did you both spend time with Daniel Bryan and Will Ospreay at Dynasty this past Sunday?
There's always a little bit of hyperbole around these AEW pay-per-views, but for one, Daniel Bryan and Will Ospreay are two people who are going to deliver on that hyperbole, I think. So even though I've heard some people say it was the greatest match to take place in the United States ever and certain things like that, whether you actually believe that or not, I think those are the two guys that are going to test.
Is this sounds like a very carefully worded way of saying you did not watch the match.
I did not watch the match, but I'm looking forward to watching the match. And I'm also honestly, I saw the Jack Perry return.
I watched the first 15 minutes of the match, and it started off slow. It started off with like the, you know, counter and then clapping, mm-hmm. like four or five of those, the counter back and forth, and then the staring, and then the clappity clap, chain wrestling, clappity clap. I fell asleep. Frankly, this was last night.
This is a tough take from the both of you.
What do you want? I mean, how much wrestling? I mean, I know, but thousands and hours. Thousands.
Listen, you could say whatever you want about hyperbole around, and you're not wrong about that, SUG. But I think we would all agree in the case of Daniel Bryan and Will Ospreay, this is time worth me. Don't you, Dip? Correct me if I'm wrong. You love wrestling.
I love it. I think it's great.
Took the words right out of my mouth, Dip.
Right. So if there's a match between two, you know, all-time greats, and people are saying it might be, you know, match of the year, match of the decade, and squeeze it in. You didn't have to watch a Bushwhackers match from 1990 last night. You could have watched Will Ospreay, Daniel Bryan.
I didn't want to miss that.
But that's among the matches that I do want to see. I also want to see that tag ladder match with the Bucks and FTR. I got
to
say,
I did not make it to Bucks FTR. I will say that.
Spoiler alert, Jack Perry is back. He's aligned himself with the Bucks. And I think for as big of a mistake and a misstep as showing the footage was, I think Jack Perry coming back and aligning himself with the Bucks was smart.
They could have just done it without that nasty footage with no commentary on it.
Well, if they wanted to show the footage, now this week would have been a good week to show the footage because Jack Perry's back and he's with the Bucks, and it's like, why? And it's like, well, because we had his back all along kind of deal.
So anyone out there, I thought the Bryan Ospreay match was brilliant. The end of it, I don't want to give too much away, but like there's this feeling that Brian might be injured at the end, which like in looking around social media at the time looked like half the people kind of were like actually, you know, really worried. It was realistic and crazy at the same time. It's an awesome match worth watching. Listen, the fact that it's on Dynasty, this like sort of random pay-per-view that popped up out of nowhere in St. Louis, is kind of odd, but it's a fantastic match. There was a bunch of fun stuff on this card, actually. As per usual with AEW, TV week to week can be sus, and then you get to the pay-per-view, and it's a hell of a night of wrestling. By the way, I will not spend another moment without congratulating Swerve Strickland, who is now the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. I stand by what I said. I think my point now looks better now, guys, than it did at the time. I said that he should have won it at Revolution. And a lot of people were like, how could you have him win it at Revolution? It would have been overshadowed. To me, now it got overshadowed. It got more overshadowed now because it was on a card where you knew Daniel Bryan and Will Ospreay were about to put on one of the greatest matches ever. And by the way, it's still, you know, people are still excited by it. I'm still excited to see Swerve get this opportunity. I just feel like the moment actually was a month earlier. But either way, congratulations to Swerve Strickland. I'm very excited to see what he does as champion. I hope he develops even further. I think that kid has an incredibly high ceiling. And shout out to Samoa Joe, a great guy. But I think in this moment in time where AEW really needs to find some things to latch onto, a new charismatic, their first black heavyweight champion, I think this has a lot more teeth to it than a perennial future Hall of Famer vet holding the title does. I think this does more for them.
I didn't see the match. I'm going to take your word for it. I didn't see the match. That's going to obviously determine a lot. I didn't think it was time for Swerve.
Look, Emilio, are you there?
Yeah, I'm ripping out my hair listening to this. Yes.
You know what? I'm pausing both of you guys for a second. Emilio, can I get your thoughts? You should have jumped in sooner. I appreciate your respect as the new producer. First, your thoughts on Ospreay Daniel Bryan.
I got to go.
All right. Well, so long, Dip. We love you.
I think we were getting the boot anyway, Dip. So you picked the...
Perfect. I don't know why you jumped in to say, I got to go. You could have just faded into that good night.
In regards to Ospreay and Danielson, it was really good. It was solid. They had the crowd eating out of their hands. And I will agree with you. I think the crowd was super blown by the time the world title match started. But I will say that the crowd picked back up once the match really started to get into the ebbs and the flows with Samoa Joe and Swerve Strickland found their rhythm. I think the right call was made in putting over the younger Will Ospreay because it seems that this guy is going to be the next world heavyweight champion.
It had to be Will Ospreay. Even though I hate that Brian hasn't gotten sort of the signature win of his AEW run, it had to be Ospreay. Had to be.
Well, I think Brian's on a different path this go around than what he had to be in WWE. He was the man possessed. He was the man on fire. He was the guy that needed to, quote unquote, finish his story as well, culminating at Miracle on Bourbon Street at WrestleMania 30 with WrestleMania. But I think here, now that he's the elder statesman and he's on the back end of his career where he says that this is the last year of his active professional wrestling as he wants to take a more backstage and creative approach with AEW, he knows what he has to do. He wants to do his dream matches. He wants to travel to Mexico. He wants to work New Japan Pro Wrestling like he has done.
I mean, with all due respect, anyone out there who sees it another way is a fool. The only way this match is supposed to happen is that Daniel Bryan and Will Ospreay have a breathtaking match, and in the end, Will Ospreay wins. That's how it's supposed to go.
And Ospreay sells it on the press conference where he talks about removing the elbow pad and doing all this stuff and then, you know, wanting to not do the Tiger Driver anymore because of whatever storyline that they're going on, which will probably set up a second match with them probably going into Las Vegas.
And real quick also, so how was the Swerve Samoa Joe match in your eyes?
I think Swerve has proved that he's a marquee name, and that happened with the Texas Death Match with Hangman Page. And this was just that now where everybody nobody looks at him now as the guy from Hit Row that was rapping in the back of vignettes on SmackDown when the New Day and King Woods were doing a crossover segment before they went out to the arena. So it changes up like the whole narrative of who he is. And I feel he was a big signing because the crowd was reactionary when he first started. Now, granted, he's a polarizing figure to follow on social media because of some of the things that he does and he says.
By the way, humor me. What is it? I follow Swerve on social. What makes him polarizing? SUG, do you know?
I wouldn't say polarizing, but definitely controversial because it goes back years, and this is sort of going to follow him, quite honestly. So as I understand it, a couple of years ago, Black Wrestling, there's a podcast hosted by Cal, Fam, Math, Mimi. Their mission statement is
friends of the show. Friends of GP.
Yeah, friends of the show. Great guys. And their mission statement has always been to sort of highlight Black talent in the indies, in the major promotions, basically everywhere. And so a couple of years ago, they put out, as they always do, the BRP 50, which is the top 50 wrestlers of the year. And it goes from Juneteenth to Juneteenth. And one year they had Swerve listed a bit lower than he, I guess, felt like he should be listed. So he took that as a slap in the face. He told them to take him off the list. And then, as I understand it, he went on another podcast, Say Less with Kaz, and basically said that he doesn't want to just be seen among Black wrestlers. He doesn't just want to be pigeonholed as just the talented Black wrestler. He wants to be just a talented wrestler.
That's always such an interesting and controversial statement from people because it can get construed to people, obviously, as like, oh, you don't care about Black things. You just want to be mainstream. When it also can mean, yo, everything I do is Black. That's who I am. And if you know Swerve, by the way, Swerve is like, you know, very much into the culture. He's not like a doesn't pay attention, kind of like happens to be Black guy, right? So he's saying sometimes, though, you want to step outside of the box and not just be thought of as the Black wrestler. So it's a very complex statement because depending who's receiving it, they can take it completely different ways, particularly in the social media era where everyone needs a take on everything that you say. So I'm just stating I've seen this go the wrong way in multiple different ways previously.
And, you know, for that statement to come out on the heels of him saying, you know, take me off the list of the Black wrestling list, it wasn't received in the way that he might have meant it. It was received exactly how you said it was in terms of, like, you know, Black fans felt alienated, right? Because he even says in the podcast with Kaz, you know, if you ask them who's your favorite Black wrestler and they say any name and you say, oh, well, is he better than Seth Rollins? Then suddenly the Black talent gets sort of pushed down as you add in other names. So it's possible that he was trying to make that point, but it was not received that way. He alienated people. And then to fast forward to last year when he's saying, I want to be the first Black AEW world champion, then it comes across as pandering to the same audience that you sort of said you didn't need.
Even though it's interesting because both could be true. You could be someone who's like, I don't want to just be on a Black list. I want to be at the top of the list. And you could also feel, I hope I become the first Black champion. Those things could both be true and not mutually exclusive.
And like I said, everybody says he's talented. Nobody says he's not talented, but he did sort of alienate people. And, you know, maybe there's a conversation that could be had on the Cheap Heat podcast, perhaps, to where we sort of sort this out.
I apologize for being old and washed. Like, honestly, Swerve is, to me, more a friend who I just root for on TV, right? So I kind of, he's the kind of guy that, like, I'm not saying I don't pay attention to his social media, but he gets a lot of obligatory double taps, keep it moving. You know what I mean? So I sort of missed that conversation, but it is interesting because when I saw the beginning of his press conference, he definitely out of the gate was talking about being the first Black champion. And by the way, shouts to Prince Nana too, who now gets to be part of the championship as well. I mean, you guys know we've waxed poetic before about Nana and how cool it is that he's gotten to end up in the place that he's in. So shouts to Nana.
And I think this goes without saying with this, and I would love your opinions on this. I think Samoa Joe's AEW title run was the perfect example of a title run that did not need to be long to achieve a goal of putting over the next person. I think Joe is about like just shy of 111 days as champion. And in that, he like really did put over Swerve Strickland in a way that makes Swerve dominant, because Joe is that dominant on microphone and in the ring.
It's a great point. Even though I feel like it could have been at Revolution and not at Dynasty, I think it's still a fair point. And it saves you Swerve MJF for when that time comes, instead of forcing that in before MJF was going to be on the shelf. So now we can look forward to that.
When is the right time? Because Swerve is red hot right now as one of the premier baby faces. Who could go in between and be a tweener? But was it the right move? I think it was to have the title go on Swerve, and then it could set up this whole thing. And we'll see on Wednesday on Dynamite where the direction goes with him as either a baby face or him as a healer, him as a tweener. And does that set up to, like Pete references, MJF? Or does it reference maybe Will Ospreay going into Wembley Stadium?
I think personally, you always want to have that sort of embarrassment of riches where it's like the fans never know if and when it's going to go where, right? Like you just never know. You don't want people to be able to say, and then you're going to get here, and then it's going to go to this person. And then like people to be able to clearly map out the progression, because then that means that the storytelling piece of it is not really interesting. Because even like, you know, we're already thinking about, and Swerve's title run is not even a week old. We're already thinking about, and then he's going to run into Ospreay in England, and then it's going to end, and then it's going to be like, you don't want to see that baton being passed. So if you can see that, then I feel like it's not the right time, because they need to keep doing what they're doing to establish the pieces around the title.
And I think it's not. I mean, for me, I think the thing that I want to see is what Swerve Strickland can do as champion. And it's an interesting time because, as we pointed out, AEW, maybe more than any other time, is such a mixed bag. It has really good things. It's had some really bad moments. It's up against WWE that is such an absolute juggernaut right now. Of course, the biggest mistake to me overall is even being in the quote up against WWE game. If I had had my opinion heard, and someone had said, hey, you're a big fan of WWE, what do you recommend to us as a new upstart company that would like to be on the map and one day compete against WWE? I would have said, what was it, 2019? I would have thought that right now, 5 years in, is when I would have started trying to take those steps to compete. Instead of adding all the shows early on, signing all of the ex-WWE people. You know, there were a couple that made sense and then others that did not make sense. And obviously we're going to see how some of the other ones go moving forward, because I see there's also a lot of conversation about Mercedes Moné, and that like she received a mixed reaction when she came out this weekend at Dynasty. Went, you know, like, are you going to do something with her or not? So anyways, it's an interesting time, but the best thing, as Emilio pointed out, is that I just love, from a wrestling standpoint, the fact that there's another place where you can go see like crazy wrestling matches happen, because you know that gets people's, listen, the executive people at WWE, they don't care. They don't know. But the talent and the guy who makes the creative decisions cares about wrestling from a cultural standpoint. So no, of course he doesn't think about AEW as competition in a real competitive way, because financially, ticket sales wise, viewership wise, it just doesn't make sense. But in terms of culturally being like, I want to put on the best product, I think it always helps to have something else out there that's driving you and pushing you to be better. Because with great success can come complacency. And if there's not an AEW, even with all their foibles, if there's not an AEW there to try to push you, you can end up in a spot where you start believing your own shit so much that the business is booming so much that all of a sudden you turn around and you're 2 years removed from things being perfect. And you're like, wait a second, are we putting on bullshit again? Like that can happen without another smaller place to kind of ground you and force you to do better shit.
AEW's existence forces WWE to not take people for granted. Like, it puts you in those real life situations. Like, you have to do right by people. You have to put them in positions. You have to make sure that everybody succeeds. Not that everybody is going to be at the top, but you have to make the right moves with these people and not just say, well, this person's always going to be here, because now the door is wide open. And it works both ways. It works both ways.
You better be able to swallow the picture of, like, when you're treating your girl, you're not treating your girl very good. All right, man, but you better be comfortable with the idea of that Facebook picture of her with a new dude. Just be comfortable. And when she says, hey, and she throws up the engagement ring photo, just make sure you're comfortable. Because if you're not, I don't, for example, because I know his name was going around quite a bit. If Drew McIntyre's not getting his due and everyone's comfortable with that, just make sure you're comfortable with that Drew McIntyre is all elite graphic. You know what I mean? Just make sure you're comfortable. And those things, you're right, SGG, those things make people think about their talent differently. And that's the whole point about what's so great about having multiple options for these men and women. Let's hit a little mailbag, kids.
Mail.
Phil's hit us up with a watch-along idea. He said, I love the recent watch-along episode. The format certainly has legs. I'd love to see more of them. While I enjoy the old-school stuff, how about some new-school old-school? In the past, Peter has mentioned his love for the Edge-Matt Hardy story of 05 to 07. That said, how about a watch-along of Unforgiven 2005, the show with that cage match between Hardy and Edge? There's also an underrated Cena versus Angle match on the card and some Snitsky and Big Show shenanigans. Loving the Mage era so far, so I'll pay tribute to the immortal words of Mobb Deep. He ain't a crook, son. He's just a mage one. Cheers, Phil from Edinburgh, Scotland. Hey, Phil, we love you, bud. I'm down.
Fortunately,
we now have a crack producer who will write down that idea, because this is what we have. A lot of ideas came in for the podcast name. Dan suggests, I don't know if you've come up with a name yet for the mental health podcast. I'm a little behind, but how about The Hope Spot with Peter Rosenberg, for obvious reasons? The Hope Spot. It's actually interesting, The Hope Spot. You have to take these names that you're getting and then realize that they're going to sound totally different to people who didn't go through this process of naming the podcast, or who don't know what wrestling is, if in fact it has that.
People who know you from the rap world and only the rap world, they're going to think of, like, the Dope Spot, the Hope Spot, just because it rhymes.
Oh, you know what? That's an interesting point also. So here, let me ask you guys a question. So I have a lot of interesting ones. I'm going to rule some out as we go on. But I've been writing them down as they've been sent here. Some of the ones at the top of the list are low points, the comeback. There's face everything and recover, which is sort of a recovery thing, and obviously the acronym for fear. And then there's one that I really like, which is in the trailer that I've made, and my cheap heat people, I really let you guys come in behind the curtain to a really high degree. In the trailer that I'm working on, I get to a point, and I think I may have said this on the episode when I talked about it a while back. I talk about how I was at a certain time in my life when all these things happened and blah, blah, blah. And I went and searched for a podcast, and I promised myself if I ever made it to the other side, I would start a podcast for people in a similar situation. Did I say that?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
In the trailer, I say, I promise myself if I made it to the other side, I would start a podcast for people in a similar situation. This is that podcast. And my therapist thought that was just an interesting name for the podcast. This is that podcast. And then it's interesting because if you read This Is That Podcast, you don't read it as This Is That Podcast. You read it as This Is That Podcast, or the This Is That Podcast. What does that mean? This Is That Podcast. So I thought that was interesting too. One of our listeners sent me a whole list of different stuff. Some of it was good. Off the mat, I thought was pretty good. Against the Ropes. And I sort of liked The Hope Spot. I don't know. The word spot is weird. When you take it out of wrestling, I don't know. I don't know that I love the word spot. I hate how much I've put so much thought into the name of this thing.
But it means something. It means something.
And then I put a lot into the background of what the podcast is, but then obviously once we get started, it will just be what it is. All right, guys, we got to wrap up here. Let me take one more email. Emilio's telling me we got to go. Ryan writes us.
Mail.
Sweet Pete and the crew, love the Friday watch along. Keep that going. Any more of that in my life. The first SNME my dad taped for me. I watched it over and over again. Like you, I've been a fan roughly since mid-'86. First real angle I remember was that backstabbing Benedict Arnold, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff turning on Hogan. I still feel the betrayal as if it happened yesterday. Just a side note on your guys' commentary regarding that being the last main event for Orndorff in the WWF. We can't forget he was in the main event of the very first Survivor Series on Hogan's team, along with Bam Bam, Morocco, and Patera. Pretty sure he turned babyface after some Fakakta storyline where Heenan claimed Rick Rude had the best body in wrestling. But Hogan and Wonderful teaming up not even a year after their intense rivalry. Mage, say it again, Mage. By the way, if you want to keep the nostalgia trip going, you guys might want to do a book corner section. The new Macho Man bio is great. And the six-pack book about six wrestlers on the card when Iron Sheik beat Backlund for the title is even better. Take care, man, and keep the late 80s alive and well in this majest of eras. That is, first of all, thank you for the correction on Orndorff. We all forgot about that.
Yeah.
But now I can totally picture him there.
He never made it back to Mania. That's what you said.
Anyways, guys, rosenbergbeats@gmail.com. That is the email address. For all of you who make it to the very end of the show, we appreciate you the most. I don't know if you know this. It makes a difference. Listening to the end of the show makes a difference. So we appreciate you. We appreciate all the reviews, all the comments. And if you enjoy what we do on Tuesdays, come around this Friday. It's going to be a big show as well. Send us an email. We'll see you on Friday. And SGG, stay mage.
Take it easy, May.